And welcome everybody to The Journey Home with Lynn Johnson and Bruce Rawls. And we have changed the name of our program, and we are doing a new thing now. And Bruce, you want to say anything about what we're doing?
Sure. I wasn't sure when you were going to start the recording, but because that's my apologies for the interruption. But yeah, I was just going to ask you if you like the idea of changing the name, because I thought, well, this will probably take us a couple years to read because it's a pretty, you know, a hefty tome, but it's so much in it. I mean, I read a couple of pages a day for about a year, and it took me to get through it. So if we read a few pages a week, it probably still take us a couple years to get through it. So I thought, well, let's just for now want to change the name of our program, The Journey Home, to reflect this book in particular, but also the emphasis in general, which is really our shared interest of returning home together from a place we never left.
Exactly. And what a beautiful book this is. This is called The Journey Home, The Obstacles to Peace in A Course in Miracles, by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick. And it's so interesting because a lot of people think that, like, the obstacles to peace is, you know, telling me bad things about myself and telling me bad things about things just like the laws of chaos. They think, you know, that's saying I'm a bad person. But the obstacles of peace really are, it's such a gift that Jesus wrote this in this way, because it really does explain the psychology of the ego and the way that the ego operates, so that I can see when I'm operating with ego and recognize, you know, what the obstacle that I'm putting between me and God. And I mean, it comes down to really basically the fear of God is the main obstacle. And you know, we don't want to be redeemed.
Right.
So this is going to be interesting and fun to read.
It's like I say, it's just chock full of great insights, and Ken, as always, skillfully pulls in just the right you know, tapestries from the course's commentary in various places, and weaves it together to make a brilliantly cohesive, you know, guide for how Jesus navigates us through all of our resistance, through all the imaginary obstacles that we put in our own way, and helps us to return to the peace that is waiting patiently for us. And I'm glad you said psychology too, because it reminded me of a conversation I had yesterday with Dr. Bob Rosenthal, and he's just about to come out with a new book called From Never Mind to Ever Mind, and I'll post that on ACIM blog shortly, while we get to it this afternoon. And anyway, he spent years as a clinical psychologist in private practice, and worked with apparently a sizable number of people with dissociative identity disorder, and among other things, we talked about the fourth and fifth chapters of his upcoming book, which are wonderfully well written. Quick plug for that. And I haven't had a chance to read the first three or the remaining chapters, but Bob said, "Well, let's talk about those." Now, here's a review copy, digital format. So anyway, but the fascinating work that he did with the multiple personality disorder, or DID as it's referred to technically, he you know, described in wonderful detail how it's such a great parallel for the you know, the schizophrenia that we all have as course students, which is really another way of talking about the resistance or the obstacles, because, you know, we want to have our feet, our identity feet, so to speak, in two worlds. We want to have ego's cake and eat it too, you know, so to speak, or maybe Holy Spirit's cake and ego's consumption. But it, you know, mixing my metaphors again. But
as long as there's cake, I'm okay.
Yeah, really. But it was a fascinating conversation, and I'll post it on ACM blog this weekend, along with another one I had the day before with Susan Dugan about joy. So I'm kind of picking up the pace a little bit now that the Foundation for Inner Peace website has been launched. I'm just doing minor cleanup, And so I'm going to be doing like a virtual fundraiser pledge drive kind of thing and asking for people's support that may or may not have done so before. I'll actually be adding a Patreon option to the PayPal. And for people who just want to contribute to this labor of love that I've been doing for about a decade, I welcome that opportunity. So that's the end of my little soapbox there. And there's a lot of different, well, almost the end. But there's a lot of different ways you can support that, including, purchasing books that you see listed that are, of course, related on the ACN blog website, and including the two that I wrote. And also, there's other affiliate links and, just cool stuff that is of interest to core students on the website. So anyway, I encourage people to look at that. But one of the coolest things is in recent weeks is this, in case you missed it, the Awaken to Love conference that just happened a couple of weeks ago. And because it's a virtual conference, you didn't miss it. You can listen to about 200 hours, listen and watch about 200 video hours of video recordings. Mine is one of many, both live and pre-recorded conversations. And they're just wonderful. I can't say enough good things about them. And they've, the folks that put it together, mostly in Europe, did so in an incredibly generous, spirited way. And just to cover some of their expenses, they've asked for a sliding scale donation for watching all 200 hours of this. Between, I think it's 33 is the lowest, and then 100 is the high end on the sliding scale that they're asking for. So I think that's for an online conference, or any kind of conference, let alone any kind of conference, that is incredibly generous.
That is very generous. Yes, absolutely.
And if you look at the if you go to ACIM blog and click on the Awaken to Love link there for that virtual conference, and look through all the names, you'll find just an amazing assortment of familiar course folk, teachers and enthusiasts and a few that are, sort of peripherally related, but, they're all contributing to that awareness of going home. So without further ado, now I'll really get off my virtual subject.
Okay. but I just wanted to say something also. I posted the link to the new, Foundation for Inner Peace website in the room.
Thank you.
I would love for people to go and look at this. This is exquisite. I am overwhelmed by how beautiful this is.
Well, thank you. I will pass that along, since I was the recipient of the design more than the designer by far. And that kudos go to Tam Morgan and Todd Hawk, Todd in particular, the visionary artist who held the vision and worked extensively with Tam and I over a more than 3-year period, amazingly. We went through countless iterations until we found something that just felt right, and I think we're all really pleased with how it turned out. So thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, it is just the kind of, if I wanted to get a feeling of inspiration, of joy from looking at a website, this is it. It is so lovely. And thank you for your contribution to it. And whoever designed this is a brilliant, brilliant artist. I'm just...
Yes. Todd has done some wonderful work. You can see more of his work on some of the holiday greetings. And there's a new section called Meditate. And it just in the kind of early stages. But we scrambled to get some of Todd's artwork up online. And it's, if you click on the Meditate link, on the site, which is new, you'll see a little slideshow that represents some of its work.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I would also highly recommend not just the look and feel, which is updated. Since we're going through some of the kudos, I want to, tip of the hat to all the people at FIP who supported not only me, but a lot of other people doing some wonderful creative work, including a mutual friend of ours, Dave Van Dyke, who did the book opening animation, which you can see if you click on the book in the header, it will launch an animation that shows the book opening. Are you looking at it right now, Lynn? Sounds like
I am. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, and Dave's a brilliant 3D animator and a best friend, literally and figuratively, for me for since seventh grade. So, and a fellow course student, we get on a lot of course related classes and study groups every week, and we're working on a book together. In fact, this will be my third book and Dave's first book when we get that.
Wow. Is Dave still in Pueblo? I haven't seen him for a long time.
Yeah.
Right here, Pueblo boy. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's my Saturday routine is chatting with you in the morning and him in the evening. So we work on this book, and we share a love of not only a course, but, you know, fun techie things and movies and books and all kinds of things. So we go way back.
Isn't that just small world, isn't it?
It is.
It really is.
So, there's a lot of contributions to that, that new FIP site from a lot of people. The ticker tape, just for people who want to be able to get to today's workbook lesson in zero clicks, it automatically comes up on almost every page except for the meditate pages and a couple others. But that's basically, you know, on every page. If you don't have to hunt around, it's like, where's today's workbook lesson? It's there. It's just right in front of you in the ticker tape. And if you want to, instead of waiting for it to gently, meditatively scroll past, you can just tap on the ticker tape to take today's tutorial. How's that for alliteration? And it will take you to the full workbook lesson for today. And if you want to use a non-chronological, you know, if you happen to start on January 1st and you're doing the workbook, you can just go to My Daily Lesson, and on whatever device you're looking at or whatever browser you're looking at. So you could have actually multiple browsers on your laptop or your phone or tablet, and you could have one just reserved for where you are on the workbook. And if you click on My Daily Lesson, if you don't go to a different workbook lesson, it'll pick up where you left off. So
very cool.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff. That was actually in place on the previous website. And a tip of the hat to Carol Hanson Gray and Victor Gray for all of their hard work for many years with the prior site, which really made a wonderful platform for us to build a new site on. So, again, thanks to Bob and Tam and of course Judy and Whit and Bob Scudge and all the other folks at FIP who very patiently and diligently helped birth this thing. So anyway, fun project, and it's going to be fun to see where we go from here. So,
yeah, you know, isn't it amazing? I don't want to ruminate too much here, but since we are a little bit that right now, this is like, I mean, I can say it's like the very beginning. We're so close to the inception of this new world that came about because of A Course in Miracles. I mean, it's our lifetime, our childhood, my teenage years, these things were being brought into the world. And you could feel it. You could feel it in the world.
Yeah.
You could feel the shift that's happening. And, you know, from the 60s, you could feel the shift. You can feel the shift that's happening now. Mm-hmm. And we're here. And we're like, we're like the dawn breakers. We're like the early apostles, kind of even. You know, not that, you know, I'm, you know, equating us with that, although it actually is true that, you know, what we're building, the foundation here, is a foundation that is actually literally going to save the world. But, you know, I say that, and then I think, well, yeah, but, you know, the world's already saved, and all we're doing is just experiencing it. So,
thank you for that.
You know, off your high horse.
Good recovery. Good recovery. No, I know, of course, where you're going with that, and appreciate your thoughts there. Yeah, I mean, it's the irony, of course, and the humor and all that is that, you know, the world that we're saving really is we're saving ourselves with a capital S self. We're saving our awareness that we thought we squandered into a seemingly silly separate self, and because we have this wonderful curriculum that on some level we chose, and to be born into this time period so that we would have this available to us in such, you know, undistorted, condensed, and distilled pure form, I think A Course in Miracles certainly represents that to me. You know, what a gift we've given ourselves, and why not share that? Because if all minds are joined and all we do moment to moment is, you know, we're teaching all, we're all teachers, we're all teaching either one of two thought systems every moment. So why not teach the thought system that says we can undo the barriers we've made to love's presence? We can, you know, vaporize the obstacles to peace. We can undo the silliness that we put in our mind that really only appears to obstruct our real identity, our perfect innocence, our true nature, our eternal, infinite, loving, generous, harmonious being that is beyond space and time. And that is really, you know, what we're here for, isn't it?
Exactly, and here we are.
Yeah, exactly. So,
here we are.
So it's been. I just want to kind of recap. It's just for people that are interested. You know, Lynn and I have spent the past year, just about, give or take a week or two, reading from Gary Renard's fourth book, The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, and now we're about to embark on another very worthy book and reading it aloud and talking about it, The Journey Home by Kenneth Wapnick, PhD. The Obstacles to Peace in A Course in Miracles. And anyway, so yeah, do check out ACIM blog, and there's I'll also put an updated link to the Recovering Bliss Mini Calendar. I put that out a couple years ago, and I don't think, because I look at the Lulu.com where I built this, and I don't think anybody bought it, only because I think maybe the resistance is really high to the idea of challenging quotes from the Course, because, you know, the typical calendar has lovely photos and lovely kind of flowery, sweet-sounding phrases. I thought, I'm going to have some fun sort of, I guess maybe a Monty Python, you know, mischievous sort of spirit inspired me. It's like, What are the most challenging phrases that you wouldn't normally see embroidered and put on a plaque on the wall or in a motivational poster in a corporate office or anything like that? These are things that you look at and say, holy crap, I guess I could look at that, but do I really want to? And yet those are the obstacles. So I think it actually ties into what we're going to talk about and I called it the Recovering Bliss Mini Calendar. So if you go to ACI blog and
I'm going to put a link in the room here.
Yeah, it's just something fun, and I thought, well, now we'll be able to see if it's the resistance to the ideas in the quotes or the price, because it was the last couple of years. I think I had it in 1995 where I made like $7. Now it's down to, you know, $5 less that go to me and correspondingly cost the whoever purchases the copy. But there are, if you stand back from it, they're just a bunch of pretty pictures. But if you zoom in real close, you'll see, ooh, there's some challenging quotes there. And anyway, I just thought it would be fun to do a calendar that really has some thought-provoking quotes that are really right at the heart of the obstacles to peace that we put in place intentionally because we thought we threw God under the bus. We thought we shattered perfect oneness. So here's the one that's on the cover of the calendar, and that it is, the world you see is a delusional system of those made mad by guilt. Look carefully at this world, and you will realize that it is so.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'll skip to the December quote, which is sort of, I think, one of the the granddaddies and Ken quotes this a lot, and I think this is the one he says that not too many course students would post this on their refrigerator, let alone in a lovely plaque on the living room wall kind of thing or over their front door. And it says, if you can be hurt by anything, you see a picture of your secret wishes, nothing more than this. And in your suffering of any kind, you see your own concealed desire to kill. but that's not what egos want to look at. They don't want to look at that stuff.
I think we're
poised, Lynn, to spend, you know, give or take a couple years, depending on what pace we choose, and let Holy Spirit guide that too, on going through these obstacles that, you know, looking at our concealed desire to kill, looking at the things that really aren't true, and it's because it's, you know, all of those obstacles are based on unconscious, unfounded guilt. And I think, again, I keep finding it really helpful to think of those double shield of oblivion that's talked about in lesson 136, I think it is, and how that really is kind of a 1-2 punch that the ego tries to do to keep us mindless. The outer shield being the world and everything in it, convincing us that it's happening to us rather than from us. So, you know, the first step in forgiveness is to turn it around. Thank you, Byron Katie, and bring it back inside, reel it into the minds. It's not about the other person. It's not about even my body. It's about the decision in my mind. And so that's the outer shield of oblivion. The inner shield of oblivion is just being willing to look at the mind with the Holy Spirit. And that willingness to look without condemnation, without being mean-spirited toward yourself or anyone else, is the foundation for going beyond that second obstacle, that second shield of oblivion, which is, of course, the mind's decision for the whole thought system of sin, guilt, and fear, which is unfounded. But we don't see that until we look at it. And the way we look at it is we look at every single annoyance, every single irritation, every single belief that seems to make us miserable, and look at it squarely with the Holy Spirit and say, wow, I could see peace instead of this. My innocence has not been changed one bit by the holograms and the little meat puppets that we identify with in a little space-time dream drama with names like Bruce and Lynn and all the little adventures that these little Whoville creatures do. That hasn't changed the vast and majestically beautiful eternal being that we all are and share. And so from that awareness, we can then afford, using Holy Spirit's guidance, to let go the second step in the forgiveness process and let Holy Spirit do the whole third step for us, which is to replace our misunderstanding with the feeling of freedom and release, of seeing what's beyond the obstacles. And there we have it.
There we have it. Yeah, and it's like as soon as the all of that is emptied out, it just fills immediately with joy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. It fills immediately with a sense of satisfaction and rest and ease. So there's no small thing, you know. Yeah. And the obstacles to peace. One of the things I love about the way that it's written is talking about what prevents peace from flowing over.
Mm-hmm.
It prevents peace from flowing over everything, and that's what it feels like when you let that go. It's like peace just flows over, and you become immersed. So that's a wonderful thing. So okay, so we're going to be reading The Journey Home, the Obstacles to Peace in A Course in Miracles by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick. And do we want to start with
You know, I thought it might be interesting actually to start with the contents. Just read the table of contents briefly.
Okay.
What do you think of that? Because it kind of gives an overview of what we're going to cover over the next however many weeks and months.
Once you do that, since my table of contents is the digital thing here.
Oh, okay, sure. So, sure. Well, it starts with the usual preface and introduction, and then he goes into chapter one, the journey begins, and then he starts with the theory of A Course in Miracles, heaven, these are the subjects, the tiny mad idea and the split mind, defense one is the secret dream of sin, guilt, and fear, that would be the inner shield of oblivion, defense two is the outer shield of oblivion, the world's dream of the body, and then the four obstacles to peace. And really the whole book is based on that section in, what is it, chapter 19 in the text? Yeah. And then the undoing of the ego through forgiveness. That's the contents of chapter one. Already some pretty substantial stuff there, right? Chapter two is the introduction to the obstacles of peace. Part one is the first obstacle, which would be in chapter three, the first obstacle, the desire to get rid of it. And chapter four is the first obstacle, is the attraction of guilt, the other part of that. And then the second obstacle in part two starts with chapter five, the second obstacle, the belief the body is valuable for what it offers. And chapter six is the second obstacle, the attraction of pain. And I put my little marginal notes there, equals pleasure. At least the ego's pain and pleasure are really two sides of the same flawed, fiat currency, basically. Okay, and then he goes on to chapter seven, the third obstacle is the attraction of death. And then he continues in chapter eight with ideas leave not their source. There's one life and that I share with God, and then concludes the attraction of death. Chapter 9 is the third obstacle is the incorruptible body, and he really sort of a chart there. We won't be able to do much with the charts because they're more visual, but there are several charts in the book. If you want to pick up a copy, you can go to ACIMblog.com, and I will I have a link there. I'm gonna update the list of books significantly. I think I'm going to see if I can find everything that's even vaguely related to A Course in Miracles and put it on an ACM blog. So it'll be kind of a one-stop shop for people looking for course-related books and material. I'll probably do that in the next couple of weeks. So then chapter 12 is The Fear to Look Within. Chapter 13 is Looking Within. 14 is Closing of the Gap. Chapter 15 is Lifting of the Veil. And continued. And chapter 16 is Saver's Vision. Then 17 is The Lifting of the Veil conclusion, and then an epilogue with The Journey Ends. So that's kind of a quick overview of what we're about to read here.
Excellent. All right. So
you want to start in with the preface?
Sure. And let me get back to it. Okay. Yeah. So because I have it on Kindle, mm-hmm. So I have it all digital, and I think I can just click on the link and it'll take me there. Yay. Right. Sometimes these ebooks don't work that way, but they're a little iffish sometimes. All right, so the preface. This is The Journey Home, The Obstacles to Peace in A Course in Miracles by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick. In 1987, I published The Obstacles to Peace, a book which had its origin in a series of recorded classes I gave in 1985 to a small group of students at the Teaching and Healing Center at Crompond, New York. The classes consisted of my exegetically
going... I'm going to look that one up, too.
I'll have to look that up. What does it mean, Bill? What am I calling you, Bill?
That's okay. That's all one person.
All right. Bill, Bruce, what does it mean, Bruce?
Let me look it up here. E-X-E. Yeah, I found myself looking up a couple of words that Bob Rosenthal used in his book, too. All right, exegetic, if I can spell it right, here we go. All right, I'm sure it'll come up with a definition pretty quick. Here we go. Well, here's it's relating to exegesis. I can't even pronounce it. It says... And that word is a critical look at a text. It comes from the Greek word for interpret, and it's often used in connection with the Bible. Oftentimes, religious rules are based on an exegesis of a text. Okay, so it's basically, it looks like just, carefully looking at something that's written, it sounds like. Yeah, okay.
Okay, that makes sense to me, yeah. And sounds like something Kent would do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going through the various sections of A Course in Miracles line by line in an informal setting that allowed for questions and discussion. One series of classes was on the obstacles to peace, a set of eight sections in chapter 19 in the text that together present all of the important themes in A Course in Miracles. For this reason, not to mention the power and beauty of their language, these sections have, from the beginning, remained one of my favorite parts of the course. The tapes of the classes were published as a cassette album by the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, and I believe I have that cassette album right here, wow. Actually in cassettes. I may transcribe, or not transcribe that, but I could actually... to put it, make it digital, because I got a cassette thing to do that. Anyway, the transcripts were then reviewed carefully by my wife, Gloria, who edited out material that, while meaningful in the original setting, seemed extraneous in the written form. Stylistic redundancies and awkwardnesses of expression were also smoothed out, and in many places additional material was included where it seemed necessary to explicate the points being made. Gloria and I then went through the entire manuscript together, following the same procedure, with the book finally reaching publication in 1987. In recent years, I thought to expand the discussion in that book, and as I proceeded to do this, I began to realize that this expansion would be substantial, indeed resulting in almost tripling of the original discussion, along with the inclusion of many more references to other passages in the course. I further concluded that an extensive introduction would be needed as well. As the book took shape, it became clear that this was going to be an entirely new book, not just a revised edition of the earlier work. I thus decided to give it the new title, The Journey Home.
So now there'll probably be a conversation about the Journey Home urtext somewhere, right?
Somewhere, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, let us not get silly.
Okay. Whatever.
Right. All right. So I'll read the acknowledgments too, because sure. Here's, I think, some of our you know, people that we know anyway. Mm-hmm. Once again, I wish to express my gratitude to the members of the class, Marjorie and Steve Dara, Dave Hunt, Rose Marie Lasasso, Gloria Wapnick, for their supportive and helpful participation. Without their comments and questions, the tape sets and original book would have been impossible. I am very grateful to Rose Marie for her careful reading of the finished manuscript of The Obstacles to Peace, and above all to Gloria for her painstaking editorial work in preserving the fidelity to Jesus' message in the course, at the same time ensuring the readability of that book. Moreover, it was Gloria's suggestions that led directly to the new and what we believe to be better format of The Journey Home. And finally, I am again indebted to Rose Marie for her careful reading and faithful editing of this book, which should greatly facilitate the student's journey through its pages. Isn't that sweet?
It really is. A side note, I'm sure if you saw the news this past week, but and from the facim.org website, you can find that there, in addition to, obviously, the FIP, acim.org website, which has just been launched. So both of them actually made it into new versions this past year. The facim.org website early in the year. The announcement that was just posted there and went out through email for people who subscribe was that they're starting up classes again in, this time, Henderson, Nevada, their new headquarters. So Jeffrey Siebert, who is a brilliant teacher, and he and Rosemary did a wonderful job for, I think, two or three years doing the streaming video series that they had. They're initially going to do just live local classes and workshops and presentations and study groups at the new center in Henderson, Nevada, which if anybody's in that general area, I highly encourage them to check that out and to participate. Or if you just happen to be visiting, it's certainly on my itinerary for next time I'm in the Las Vegas area. I think Rosemary stayed in the Temecula area, so maybe she'll resurface again doing some other contributions. But she and Jeff had some wonderful streaming videos. I was fortunate to catch quite a number of them while they were available the last few years. And so it's been just about a year since they wrapped up that series. So now it looks like Jeff is going to pick up where he left off with that, and hopefully that will resume with video streaming again sometime shortly thereafter.
That is wonderful. That is
wonderful.
You know, it is. I can't emphasize more how important it is to me that the people who have a real, and of course this is being pretty elitist, I guess, but people who have a really good handle on what A Course in Miracles really is all about, and the function, the aim of the course to shift the world, bring about the miracle. That having those people in charge of making sure that message gets out is so important, because mm-hmm. I see so many other Course in Miracles quote unquote teachers who are off into all kinds of other promotion that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with the reality of what Jesus is asking us to do.
Exactly.
So, you know, this is why, you know, if I can support organizations, FIP and FACIM, absolutely important to support. And especially, they're now asking for help with continuing with the translation program.
Yes.
That's just a huge, huge, huge thing.
Oh, it is. It is. It has been ongoing. And with Canon Witt's passing, Dr. Bob Rosenthal is picking up some of that slack. And I'm sure there will be other contributors helping with that as well over time. But Ken basically worked with all the, I believe it was all 27 of the translations that are out now in print form, and with Whit Whitson, who just passed this past year, Judy's husband, that, you know, the two of them really did an enormous amount of work, and we, the world literally, can afford to be extremely grateful for their combined efforts and all of the translators. Oh, another thing that if you haven't seen it, there is, if you go to the translator section on the new FIP website on acm.org, click on translators and you will find in that section a page that was originally not on the other site, but it was on its own special site, that had some videos in English, by all of the most of the translators, talking about what the course meant to them. And it's a wonderful collection of short videos. They're all, you know, probably 3 to 6 minutes each kind of thing. But they're just really brilliant examples of how working with this material literally transformed the lives of each of those translators. And they share with, you know, tremendous gratitude and clarity, you know, how that really was helpful to them. So it's sort of interesting. Is in one sense, it's sort of like an account of the translation process, but more importantly, it's an account of the transformation that took place as they let the meaning of the words, as they were transcribing it and translating it, sink in and impact their own lives. And that, in fact, that was crucial to the process, and that's why Ken was very insistent, from what I understand, making sure that the translators really understood the pure non-dual message of the course, and that you know, obviously is going to continue onward with future translations, which include I couldn't help but notice the acronym embedded in three audio translations that are underway, namely the French, Italian, and Portuguese, which just went out. And an email bulletin from the Foundation for Inner Peace, which if you haven't subscribed to that email bulletin, by all means do so. You can get updates typically on a monthly basis there. And the FIP website also has the weekly thought graphics that were done by Carol Hansen Gray. And there'll probably be a few more from other people in the future, but for the time being, there's this enormous backlog of wonderful graphics that Carol did over a decade or so that are being brought back again in a timely fashion with wonderful course quotes and the gorgeous graphics that she put to them. So, yeah, two different things you can subscribe to, the weekly thoughts as well as the occasional periodic updates about news from the course, including translations, such as the one that went out yesterday about the three existing audiobooks that have the course in different languages and three more underway. So.
That is very, very cool, too. And something that you were mentioning just now and talking about with the care in the translations, one person I know who thought that they could translate the course into another language and began doing so, and while working with the foundation, and the foundation they recognized that this person didn't really translate the metaphysics correctly, and maybe they didn't understand the metaphysics, and so they ended up getting another translator or other translators to do it.
Okay, and the
person was pretty offended, thinking, well, I can translate into this language just as well as anybody else can. But the point was not the word for word translation of the language. The point is that the metaphysics stays whole, and sometimes that doesn't happen through direct English to German translation, say, for instance. And so the translator really has to be clear on what is being taught by the Course. They must be clear with the sheer non-duality. They can't be confused about that, because they might put in, you know, a translation that isn't true to the intent of Jesus. And so it's not just a matter of translating in, like, putting it into Google Translate. And I mean, try that. Take a passage before.
That's usually a good method for getting a laugh sometimes, because a lot of times you put in things and when you see the translation, you know, back to English, it's like, that can't be what they meant. But it says something particularly silly, you know. But, don't get me wrong. Google Translate is good to get a very rough first order approximation in most cases to what's being attempted to be conveyed. But there's, you know, certain idioms and things that just don't translate. And more importantly, as you were pointing out, the melos is the, as Ken's wonderful last few Lighthouse articles illustrated, the melos is kind of the meaning behind the words and the quality or feeling or the awareness that really is, if you wanted to be so bold to say, it's really Jesus speaking through the Course and then through the translator. And so without that connection, it's just an empty form. The content has to be there. The content in the mind is the crucial part. And that's what they were real sticklers with for those 27 translations. And will continue to be so. And I think that's what we can afford to appreciate and that effort and that care of keeping the message intact. And as, like you say, the pure non-dual message of the Course is really what makes it worthwhile. Because without that, it's just like, well, it's a nice theory. Doesn't actually work, but, you know, you might enjoy studying it just for kicks or grins or something, you know. but no, this actually works. I'm kind of reminded of Helen's resistance and Helen's in a sense a symbol for all of us in terms of our resistance and certainly in the early stages of our study and practice, of course. When she said, I know it's true, I just don't believe it. And so, if we can look at that resistance, we're back to the subject material of this book we're reading, is look at the obstacles that we put in the way of peace and do that with a kind, gentle, patient awareness that helps us undo those blocks, helps us remove those obstacles.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's how, well, those translators may not have even known the Course before, but as they translated the Course, it shifted them. It shifted their lives. It shifted their thinking. And I'm sure those are some interesting stories. I know we have one lady, Ephrat Sar Shalom, uh-huh, who's been here and talked about her experience with the translation. And, yeah, it shifts people.
It does. Yeah, she was one of about 100 different Course folk around the world who was shared and had recorded and live interviews on the Awaken to Love conference that just was completed. So, again, if you're interested in that, I highly recommend just for a nominal contribution, giving yourself access to a couple hundred hours of wonderful videos, including, you know, several of the translators like Ephrat and Willem Glaudemans from who did the Dutch translation, teachers that you're probably going to be really familiar with, everyone from Gary and Cindy and Marianne Williamson and David Hofmeister, and just, you know, the list goes on and on. It's certainly more the more familiar names, plus a whole lot of people that were Spanish and German and Portuguese speaking, of course, two teachers who I obviously didn't understand the language directly, but I understood the feeling while I watched a few minutes of each video, and that came across very nicely. You could tell that the quality of what they were imparting you know, the words may not have registered in terms of, you know, the translation, but the feeling comes across. So anyway, check it out if you're inspired to do so.
Absolutely. So do you want to go ahead and start with where to the introduction? Would you like to read the introduction?
Sure.
Maybe we'll get through that today and be able to start on the actual text next week.
That sounds perfect. So the introduction begins, as this title suggests, the book has been structured around the theme of a journey and has done so on two levels. There is, of course, the journey home that all the separated sons of God embark on, whether they are conscious of it at any given moment or not. The way back begins with a recognition that, quote, there must be another way, unquote. William Thetford's fateful words to Helen Schuckman that launched their own journey with A Course in Miracles in 1965. And a better teacher with whom to navigate the ocean of life, to be more specific with the metaphor. At this point, our journey home is underway, taking us through the various defenses that the ego has defined as salvation. Ego's version of salvation is a bit questionable. Okay, now with a different guide, these insane distortions and convoluted detours are gradually seen as they truly are, obstacles to our peace, and therefore no longer worthy to be our allies or friends. And so our line by line reading through these eight sections on the four obstacles to peace parallels our painstaking, though inexorable, determination to leave the ego's world with Jesus, or the Holy Spirit, as our companion. Thus we make the journey back to God we never truly left, described in the text as, quote, a journey without distance to a goal that has never changed. And that's from chapter 8, section 6, paragraph 9, sentence 7. Do you want to read the next paragraph or so?
Sure. Let's see. So here, okay. On another level, this is a journey through A Course in Miracles itself, and one that allows us most carefully to examine Jesus' teachings. These encompass both the actual theory of the Course as well as its practical application in our daily lives through seeking Jesus' help to forgive and let go of all the judgments against others, Him, ourselves, and God. By exiting these sections, by going through them line by line, as well as other passages from the Course, students will hopefully come away from this book with a better idea of what A Course in Miracles truly says, the masterfully symphonic way in which the material has been organized, and a deeper appreciation of the profundity and significance of its teachings. I might add that such an understanding has always been the goal of the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, co-founded by my wife, Gloria, and me in 1983 as the teaching organization of the Foundation for Inner Peace, original publishers of A Course in Miracles. Our purpose through our various workshops, classes, and publications has always been to help students of the Course more effectively study, understand, and apply its principles to their personal lives. Such application, the only important goal of any authentic spiritual path, is impossible without first understanding what one is applying. This is the meaning of Jesus' opening words of the introduction to the workbook. And here it is from the intro to the workbook. A theoretical foundation, such as the text provides, is necessary as a framework to make the exercises in this workbook meaningful. It is the purpose of this workbook to train your mind to think along the lines the text sets forth. And that's from the introduction to the workbook. And so we present the journey home in the spirit of this goal of increased student understanding of Jesus' teachings and A Course of Miracles, leading to their more effective integration into one's everyday life. And one final note. Almost all students have commented on the repetitive nature of the material Jesus presents throughout the three books of the course's curriculum. The aforementioned symphonic structure of A Course in Miracles, the text especially, provides the framework within which the master composer Jesus continually weaves his theme of salvation. They are introduced and reintroduced continually in a musical fabric described in words that I borrow from the introduction to my glossary index for A Course in Miracles. And I'll let you read that.
Okay. Before I do, I just want to say I think we're over the hump, because I don't remember, since I just finished my first reading of this book last night, about a year, reading a couple pages a day, I don't recall reading any form of that word exegesis again. So we may not have to stumble over that for the rest of our reading.
Or else we need to learn how to pronounce it.
Exactly. I might have to look up the pronunciation. So anyway, Ken continues, and this is from his glossary index. Page 1. The course's development is circular, with its themes treated symphonically. Introduced, set aside. Reintroduced, and developed. This results in an interlocking matrix in which every part is integral and essential to the whole, while implicitly containing that whole within itself. Sounds like the holographic nature of our real self that appears to be in seemingly separate selves and fragments, which is one of the conversations that we covered in some depth with Bob Rosenthal and myself yesterday, which, again, I'll put on ACM blog this afternoon. Okay. The structure establishes a process of learning instead of merely setting forth a theoretical system. The process resembles the ascent up a spiral staircase. The reader is led in a circular pattern, each revolution leading higher until the top of the spiral is reached, which opens unto God. Thus, the same material consistently recurs both within the course as a thought system as well as in learning opportunities in our personal lives. Each revolution, as it were, leads us closer to our spiritual goal. That, again, is from page 1 of Ken's glossary index for A Course in Miracles. I'm going to add a little side note that kind of ties into a little sacred geometry, and that could relate to everything from DNA helices to the path of our planet through the galaxy. And we usually think of it as sort of a circular or hopefully a slightly more accurate, an elliptical rotation around the Earth, around the Sun and the other planets, and similar, you know, ellipses or various eccentricities, I think is the right word for the how far the ellipse strays from a circle. But if you really think about the fact that the Sun itself is also rotating around the center of the galaxy, or the center of the Milky Way, and so if you really were an outside observer to the solar system, each of the planets would be tracing helical paths, curved helical paths at that. So, you know, the idea that, you know, we're just going around in circles, well, there is kind of an evolution in the sense that each year, each season, we come around to the same perspective in terms of, you know, the archetypes for that season or that month or that week or whatever. So we get a chance to, you know, choose once again when we're confronted with things that are classroom exercises, if you will, our forgiveness opportunities. And sometimes that takes the form of you move to a different town and you find people that remind you of people where you lived before, or perhaps family members or combinations of people. But the whole thing of, I think, the forgiveness classroom that we have is this holographic thing that as we go through life, we get opportunities to give it a better shot each time, and to be more kind, more loving, more patient, more gentle and more generous with that awareness each time it goes around. And so when we come back to a similar kind of experience, we've strengthened our spiritual muscle by making it a habit. And I think that's why Ken very appropriately talks about the symphonic nature of, you know, those melodies come back around, because, you know, we don't completely let go of our resistance in any one exercise. It's a process of undoing that to make it easy for us in the belief of what we think we are and who we think we are. You know, it seems more comfortable to do it on a gradual basis. So we have this opportunity to slowly ease out of the insanity and into the sanity, right?
Exactly. And I love that. And that's something I kind of see too. It is like we're just spiraling. We're just rotating, spiraling and getting higher and higher and higher. And that's, you know, Jesus talks about the ladder, you mm-hmm. know, that
yeah.
we're going up the spiral staircase.
Right.
And, yeah, perfect.
But of course, in truth, all those, you know, structural, geometric, spatial, temporal, all those metaphors, you know, are meaningless. But where we think we are, because we're so related to space and time and form, why not use those as ways, as mental, you know, scaffolding, so to speak, to get back to the place in our mind where we ultimately recognize that we've always been home all along.
Exactly.
So you want to read the last paragraph?
I'll read the last paragraph. Therefore, this structure of repetitive themes that is so central to the form and content of A Course in Miracles is found here in this book as well. Yay! Readers thus will find themselves confronting the same thoughts and ideas and even quotations over and over again. Each instance, we hope, reinforcing their understanding as part of the process of learning that will happily speed them along to the journey's end. Wow! Beautiful. So this is the book, The Journey's End, Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, The Obstacles to Peace in A Course in Miracles. And Bruce and I have committed to reading this book, woohoo, for the next, until it's done.
It might be a couple years, give or take.
Sure, that may happen, but this is what I'm talking, you know, I'm planning on starting a program in January going through the Manual for Teachers.
Okay.
And I wanted to get on Zoom and get a group of people that we can do this Manual for Teachers exactly this way. It's what you call deepening, that you go line by line through the and really come to understand what it is that we're doing here. So
nice. Are you going to use Journey Through the Manual?
No, I'm going to use just the manual.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so it'll just be me and hopefully a group of people reading the manual and discussing how it works, what it means. And
Nice.
Yeah, so.
One thing I particularly enjoyed in reading Journey Through the Manual is Ken pointed out how there's really two themes in the manual that are woven throughout, and one is that of shared interest, and the other is trusting in the Holy Spirit. And when you go back and reread the manual with that, and he does a beautifully skillful job of showing how those two vital practices, you know, relate to our, you know, reteaching our mind, and we're always teaching one or two thought systems at every moment again, you know, and transforming, and undoing the obstacles. So thank you again, Lynn, for another wonderful hour. Sharing about A Course in Miracles.
Thank you, Bruce. And I'm going to hang up on Pal Talk here.
Okay.
Really quick.